Coming up on Weekend America.
Catering is tough. The clients, the silverware, making sure they have those tiny quiches ready, the pressure. Multiply that times a zillion, and that's catering in Washington this week. This hour, we interrupt a DC caterer at work and ask how it's going. I'm John Moe. Also, Pennsylvanians are thinking about something that could make them sick or rich.
Well, our neighbors got $5 an acre, so when we got 65, we thought we hit the lottery. But now they're getting as high as $2,500. So
how does that feel?
Not good.
And recordings of those voices in your head when you stay up all night.
Maybe it's time to just stop trying to fall asleep. You will sleep when you cease your selfish craving for sleep. Wait a minute. Is that the paper boy?
Wake up. It's Weekend America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe in St. Paul, where we're gearing up for Winter Carnival. It starts next week. See, in 1885, a New York newspaper reporter who had visited here wrote that St. Paul was another Siberia, unfit for human habitation. And so, out of civic pride and some spite, Winter Carnival was born. There are parades, royalty is crowned. It's like Mardi Gras, but colder, and everyone keeps their clothes on. Mostly, I think. Over in Washington, they're gearing up for another coronation, of course. Inauguration Day is Tuesday. Besides the president, who would you like to see speak at the inauguration?
I'd like to see Jimmy Carter speak at the inauguration.
I want Lil Wayne to speak.
I think Oprah would be a great person to speak on Inauguration Day.
Jesse Ventura.
Perhaps the Nobel Peace Prize winner would be a good option for other speakers of importance.
The former president, President Bush.
He should give the world a global apology for his last 8 years.
I think the inauguration needs a little spicing up, and I believe that Anthony Bourdain could do that.
Thomas Pynchon. He's been keeping a low profile for a long time.
Yeah, good luck with Pynchon. Maybe he and Salinger could ride to the inauguration together. Those voices came from St. Paul, Denver, Ann Arbor, Concord, New Hampshire, and Birmingham, Alabama. Washington is expected to be packed over the next few days for the inauguration. Hotels have been booked up since forever. It's going to be crazy there. And most of us aren't going to show up. Instead, we're going to be at home wondering what it's like. But that's why we have reporters, right? Renee Gattell is in the D.C. metro area. Hello, Renee.
Hello, John.
So paint a picture for us. Tell us what we're missing out on in Washington.
Well, you're missing out on being part of a moment in history. It's really extraordinary what's happening. It's kind of wild to be witnessing it. The inauguration is what's on the tip of everyone's lips. I think after the inauguration, that people are talking about the cold, because it has been fairly cold here, although I know that I won't get any sympathy from you on
none.
That end.
Since... No, none. I understand that that the commercial, the historical aspect is alive and well, but the commercial aspect, the merchandising aspect, is alive and well in D.C.
It is extreme. I'm riding around on the metro system when I get around using a metro card that has Barack Obama's face on it. I passed a bar that is handing out inaugural shot glasses that have some, you know, have the date on it. Just about everything, T-shirts, all the kind of inaugural swag you can imagine.
So is it a party or is it a solemn historic occasion?
Well, it's a bit of both. I mean, you have a lot of the commercialism inherent in any big event, anytime you have so many people gathering in one location. But it also is a solemn event. I ran into a pair of tourists from Arizona who said that they just bought a plane ticket right after the election because they wouldn't miss this event for anything in the world. And they were African American, and they said in particular it had a strong resonance for them. And I said to the woman I spoke with, I said, well, how are you going to get through Tuesday? And she said, I'm just going to bawl my way through it. So it's yes, there's a lot of the kitschy commercialistic side, but it's still, to use your words, a solemn event.
And I understand you're not in D.C. right now, technically. Where are you, Renee?
I am at Windows Catering Company in Arlington, Virginia, and I'm right in the midst of their massive kitchen. And this is one of the premier catering companies in the D.C. metro area. I'm standing just feet away from people who are filleting salmon, chopping cabbage, making tuna rolls. And this is one of the catering companies that's making all sorts of food for many of the inaugural events over the next several days.
And I understand you're with one of the top guys there.
Yes, I'm going to pass the phone over to Pasquale Ingenito. He's the executive chef here at Windows Catering, and he has been cooking for inaugural events since the inauguration of George Bush Sr. in 1989. So here he is.
Hello, Pasquale.
Hello, John.
Hi. Tell me.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. How are you holding up? How intense is this weekend compared to most?
Well, it's very intense. It's very exciting. You know, we're happy to be a part of it. It's historical, and it's also remarkable. We're just proud to be a part of everything like this.
And I understand you've been doing this for a while. How is the food being served at the events you're catering as part of the Obama inaugural different than the Bush inaugurals? How is Obama food different from Bush food?
That's a good question. You know, a lot of the food that we're doing this time around, it's that comfort food, but with that celebration feel to it. And I can give you an example. Like, we have a slow-roasted boneless short ribs, but we have that crowned with seared foie gras. We have a macaroni and cheese, which is very comforty, but we have that infused with St. Andre cheese and Maine lobster. So it's comfort food with celebration added to it.
Why the comfort food?
Well, in Washington right now, it's a little bit cold.
Yeah.
And that makes us all feel a little homey and warm.
Right. A little bit nervous about the economy. We need to feel comforted. Is that part of it?
Well, I think we all have to be worried about it, but we got to stand behind our new president, and we got to hope and pray that it gets better.
How long
on the same boat.
How long have you been preparing for Inauguration Week?
Well, we know that we start our planning, of course, as soon as we get, inquiries. We start planning in the summer for this. But we'll start actually cooking for these events starting tomorrow.
Okay.
To keep things as fresh as possible at all times.
Is there more pressure on you that you feel to have everything be perfect because the whole world is watching? I mean, they're not watching the canapes and the crudité, presumably, but it's a big event happening.
It is a big event, and we're happy. We're proud to be part of it, and we love to work under these conditions. Just like I said, it's nothing really new to our company. We've been involved with the Norwoods since 1989, and we like being under pressure because we are somebody that we can deliver under pressure. And so, again, we're all excited, and it's a controlled excitement. We're veterans at doing this, and we're proud to be a part of it.
Pasquale Ingenito is the executive chef of the Windows Catering Company, one of the premier catering companies in the D.C. area. Pasquale, I'm going to let you get back to work. I imagine that there are foods needing to be assembled. And
thank you, John.
All right. Thanks so much for your time, sir.
Thank you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Well, part of the reason Barack Obama is the one taking the oath of office instead of John McCain on Tuesday is the immigrant vote. Immigrants turned out in record numbers for Obama, but it's unclear what he plans to do about immigration issues once he is in office and how quickly he plans to act. As a senator, Barack Obama supported the DREAM Act, which would offer help for children who were brought illegally over the border. They could obtain legal status through higher education or the military. Daniela Gerson reports that the act could be a win-win for both immigrant youth and military recruiters.
Sergeant Major, Cadet Secretary Santa Castillo requests permission to enter the performance area.
Permission granted.
Thanks, Sergeant Major. Order!
It's 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and the Hollywood High School gym is packed. All eyes are focused on four uniformed junior ROTC cadets as they spin rifles and march in unison across a basketball court. 22-year-old Jose watches from the side, beaming. We're only using his first name for reasons that will become clear. For the past few months, Jose's been coming to school before dawn, helping the team to prepare for this competition. 5 years ago, it was Jose who was the focus of attention. One of the battalion's top achievers, military recruiters were competing to offer him the best package.
I will be more than honored to give my best to this country due to everything that they've done for me. But then, just like a nightmare right now.
Jose grew up thinking he could do whatever he wanted. But it didn't turn out that way. He was raised in Southern California, skateboarding and taking trips to the beach. Jose was a good student and even won a citizenship award in elementary school. But when he was a teenager, he asked his mother for his social security number.
That's when she came out with, we're not legal here, so I didn't have no rights.
He was born in Mexico and then smuggled across the border when he was 3 years old.
Do you remember this at all?
No, I don't remember this. Because I was so little. You know, like, it's not like I knew what was going on at the time when, like, I was crossing the border. It just, I have no words for it. No.
At first, it didn't seem to matter that he wasn't a citizen. In high school, he won scholarships to look at colleges in the Northeast and even to go on an Outward Bound expedition. Sergeant Wilbert Adams was his junior ROTC instructor.
One of the best. He couldn't have held that position he had, top position, battalion commander, had he not been good from the very start. From his freshman year, he had something about him.
But as an illegal immigrant, Jose couldn't join the military. So Sergeant Adams watched one of his best students hit a wall.
And you feel helpless? And it's not a thing I do with the knowledge I know and the people I know. There's not a thing I can do. It makes you want to cry. I have cried sometimes.
Hollywood Recruiting Station, Sergeant Wooten.
The Hollywood Armed Forces Career Center is just a few blocks from school. There, even as recruiters work hard to enlist soldiers, they're turning away scores of illegal immigrants. Sergeant Juan Carmona, the commander of the Army Recruiting Station, says the inquiries are constant.
3 to 4 calls a day at a minimum. I don't know where the rumor started that supposedly they could join without having a permanent residency.
Unlike most of the illegal immigrants calling the recruiters, Jose didn't choose to come to America. And some lawmakers in Washington say that should make all the difference. Federal legislation first introduced in 2001 would enable young people like Jose to receive legal status through education or military service. It was called the DREAM Act, and it collapsed in 2007, with critics charging it could increase illegal immigration. Under the Obama administration, it could resurface, this time with the votes it needs to pass. Even if the government never forgives Jose's trespass, he will claim this country as his own. At his family's North Hollywood home, Jose points to two flags on the wall, one Mexican and one American.
That U.S. flag, that's mine. Like, I know I was not born here, but I do feel like it's 100%, you know, I'm part of this country, since this is the only country that has shown me and given me so many stuff.
It's after 9 p.m., and Jose starts to get ready to go. He works a graveyard shift at an airplane factory, using the identity of a cousin who has legal status. For now, assembling military planes and coaching the drill team at Hollywood High are as close as he can get to fighting for his country. In Los Angeles, I'm Daniela Gerson for Weekend America.
If you go to our website, we have pictures of Jose at Hollywood High School. His identity is somewhat concealed. You can see pictures of the junior ROTC program, some of the recruiters. We also invite your comments at our website at weekendamerica.org. What do you think about this? What do you think the policy should be? How do you think situations like this ought to be handled? Radio isn't just us broadcasting the truth to you. It's a discussion in many cases. We invite your comments when you find this story at our website, weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
There's something under the ground that could make Pennsylvanians filthy rich, and it could make their air just filthy. So what do they do? Next on Weekend America. It's Weekend America from American Public Media. I'm John Moe. Over the past few years, prospectors have been combing the hills of Pennsylvania. They're not looking for gold. The mineral that's setting off the frenzy is shale. It's a mile or more below the ground, and it's full of natural gas, this shale, maybe enough to fuel the entire United States for 2 years. The gas rush could make some Pennsylvanians very, very rich, but it could also pollute the state's air and water. And that has set up a conflict between natives of the area and weekenders, mostly New Yorkers, who own second homes there. As part of our collaboration with the PBS television project Blueprint America, reporter Rick Carr went to northeastern Pennsylvania to look into what's pitting neighbor against neighbor.
Bill Bryant's family moved to Damascus Township, Pennsylvania, close to 170 years ago.
1841.
Some pretty deep roots.
Yeah, they cleared the land here. They were Connecticut Yankees.
It's gorgeous land, pretty much the definition of bucolic, with lush, gentle hills and a view of the Catskill Mountains in the distance. Bryant's a dairy farmer, but he's also watching a gas company slowly move into the area.
That whole side hill over there is signed up with Chesapeake. Like I say, the guy across the road is signed with Chesapeake. The guy across the road probably only signed for 1,400. And that guy signed for a couple thousand. But they did get up to around 2,800 here, too.
That's how much the gas companies were paying per acre, just as a signing bonus. At that rate, Bryant would have earned about $750,000 on his 260 acres. And once the wells started pumping gas from under his land, he'd earn a percentage of the revenues. But he didn't sign, in part because he and his family have questions about the environmental impact of drilling. Here's why. The fuel's actually trapped in little pockets in the shale. Tom Murphy of the Penn State Cooperative Extension says to get the gas out of those pockets, energy companies use a technique called hydraulic fracturing.
Forcing millions of gallons of water down into this rock strata and breaking it open.
They force the water into the borehole at extremely high pressure, which opens up tiny cracks in the rock.
You're looking at something essentially the thickness of a hair.
Then they pump sand into the hole.
That sand goes down, acts as a proppant, and actually holds those cracks open.
So once the water gets pumped out, the gas flows up to the surface and ultimately to your furnace. The thing is, energy companies aren't just pumping water and sand into the ground. The fluid that they use is actually a soup that contains scores of chemicals, and some of those ingredients are toxic. They can cause brain and kidney damage, even cancer. And environmentalists say, given the track record of operations like this in Texas and across the West, there's almost no oversight when it comes to disposing of the fluid. So it might end up in the water table or in lakes and streams or even evaporating. And because of those risks, they want the drilling to stop.
Okay, we'll see you in Damascus.
Every weekend, Joe Levine and Jane Seifert leave their home in Brooklyn for a barn that they converted into a weekend home, not far from Bryant's farm. It's where the anti-drilling movement meets to talk strategy.
Okay, you know what we really should start with?
For public consumption.
I think we should just start with like a brief report about the scoping hearing that that just happened.
Levine and Seifert helped organize a group called Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. A lot of locals think they're nothing but NIMBYs, but Pat Carullo, another of the group's organizers, said there's something much bigger at stake.
This is not our backyard. This is the drinking water source for 15 million Americans.
As he said that, he gestured out a wall of windows with a sweeping view of the Delaware River a couple hundred feet downhill. New York City's reservoirs are upstream, and Philadelphia and Wilmington tap the Delaware watershed downstream. The locals say they understand that. That as farmers, they're well aware of the environmental risks and they're trying to minimize them. They accuse the folks in Damascus Citizens of being condescending, treating them like ignorant rubes. They say it's like the two sides aren't even speaking the same language. Pat Carullo from the group says he knows what language he's speaking.
I'm speaking English. I don't exactly know what language someone might be speaking who says, we understand that the gas and oil industry is operating under total federal deregulation. We understand that there's going to be a catastrophic result from thousands of gas wells in a watershed, which is protected by a sitting act of Congress, and we're going to proceed anyway. I don't understand. That doesn't seem to me like English.
The locals also say the gas companies are in Pennsylvania to stay. the drilling is inevitable. But Barbara Arendelle, another organizer of Damascus Citizens, says nothing's inevitable.
The inevitability of someone who was born into an African-American, a Negro, or whatever terminology of dark skin in this country, it was inevitable that they were going to be a slave. Now, that's not the case today.
But it took a war to establish that.
Well, it might take a war to do this. If someone's only looking at what's going to go in my pocket and I don't care about anything else, well, then that's the language that they might have to understand, that they will be sued, that there are costs involved in this beyond what is just going to go into their pocket.
A lot of the farmers in the area just roll their eyes when you mention the Damascus Citizens. They see them as carpetbaggers who just don't understand farm life. Some of the group's members are weekenders, others live in the area full-time, but most of its leaders are New Yorkers, city people. They're part of a wave of city people who've been moving into the area for years now. As they buy and build homes, property taxes rise, and it gets harder to run dairy farms. Bill Bryant, the farmer we heard from earlier whose family's been working the land here for nearly 170 years, he says he's tried to adapt to the changes by opening an artisanal cheesemaking operation. But not without some misgivings.
I'm personally maybe a little bit anti-city people, but the cheese thing works better with the city people. So, I mean, we're trying to take advantage of what's happening in the area. Because the trend in dairy farmers is just to keep getting bigger. And we're probably almost the biggest in the county now, and we don't want to get any bigger, you know. So at that point, you got to look to do something else.
For some of his neighbors, something else comes down to two choices. Either sign a gas lease or sell off the land.
And those places are basically in jeopardy of being subdivided, and somebody from the city would get a hold of them. So are we better off with those places subdivided and more city people in the area? Or are we better off with the people that have been here for 100 years, keeping those tracts in the family and getting some money from gas to pay their taxes and keep the land? So I don't know which is worse.
Bill Bryant has time to make up his mind. Gas companies have cut back on signing new leases thanks to the economy. Meanwhile, two counties away, drilling's already taking place. Its opponents are lobbying lawmakers to stop it before it goes any farther. In Damascus Township, Pennsylvania, I'm Rick Carr for Weekend America and Blueprint America.
Blueprint America is made possible with support from the Rockefeller Foundation. We have a link to the Blueprint America website at our website. You can go into a more in-depth discussion on some of these issues, do some further reading. It's one of these things. The more you read, the more you find out, the more interesting and complicated it becomes. Go to weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Foster School of Business Executive MBA program.
You ever lie in bed and you can't sleep and all these crazy thoughts run through your mind? What if you hooked them up to a microphone and recorded them? Ahead on Weekend America. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe, and it's time to listen to your weekend soundtrack, the song that you carry with you all weekend long. And our latest comes from Amy Hoffman in San Diego. Her weekend soundtrack is From the Bottom of My Heart by the Wallflowers.
Fire on the porch on a summer's night. All of my things are there inside. Black smoke rise up, I burn on, burn higher. I smell leaves and burning tires. Dogs in the meadows barking wild. Blackbird rise up, now tell me what have you done.
Amy Hoffman, why is From the Bottom of My Heart by the Wallflowers your weekend soundtrack?
About a year ago, we had the wildfires in San Diego, and that was a very scary and traumatic time. I live in the neighborhood that was mostly affected by it. During the time that I was sort of recovering and healing from that event, I was listening to the song and it had come to my attention, and it spoke first to my depression and then it helped me heal, and it spoke a lot to my emotions during that time and afterwards.
There is nothing but dust when the layers I'm peeling from the bottom of my heart beats a rattling drum. Well, coming up from the depths into the rays of the sun.
Did you lose your home in the fire?
I did not, but it was very close to us. It was dark. It was kind of the eerie orange glow, very strong winds, ash everywhere, police everywhere, everybody trying to get out of the neighborhood, and it was almost like the fire was on us. So we had to get out quickly and then couldn't go back for 3 or 4 days. Everybody who evacuated didn't know right away if their houses survived or not.
What section of the lyrics really jumps out at you?
There's a point where he's saying, I once crossed a quarter mile through black pools of razor wire and cut through the steel with the edge of a file. And singing rhapsodies in stride, hell-bent and dignified, now my time has come, who are you fooling and why?
Razor wires cut through steel with the edge of a file. Singing rhapsodies in stride, or hell-bent and dignified, but my time has come. But who you fooling and why? From the bottom of my heart comes a cold, dark feeling.
There's some sadness in the song, but there's a lot of hope in that verse right there, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And I think that's when I first picked it up, that when I was feeling like healing, and I picked that up and I felt, yes, okay, that was bad. We can get through this. And then from the bottom of my heart comes an army of one marching back up the steps into the rays of the sun. I think that kind of sums it up again as well. The hope.
Amy Hoffman of San Diego, California. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Pale-faced and hollowed eyes, buried under the ruptured skies. Not every smile means I'm laughing inside. Two-faced and compromised, I've enraptured to you with lies. Oh, everything means nothing, and tonight everything is mine.
Amy's weekend soundtrack is From the Bottom of My Heart by the Wallflowers. We've been doing this segment for a while now, and we've built up a pretty good stockpile of weekend soundtracks, and more importantly, really, the stories that go with them, people's stories. They're all at weekendamerica.org. Go there, listen in, get lost in the weekends of others. Pretty good way to spend your own weekend, really.
Comes a cold, dark feeling, wrapped around time.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
In St. Paul, I'm John Moe. Some of you may already know that Weekend America is coming to an end. January 31st will be our last broadcast. If you didn't know that, I'm sorry. In these last couple of weeks, we wanted to give you the chance to hear some segments that we're really proud of. And many of the best moments on our show came from you, the listener, the person I sometimes refer to as the co-producer of this program. Back in November of 2007, we asked what you do when you have trouble sleeping at night. Do you capture your roving thoughts? Do you exercise the mind or your creativity? Do you have no choice of sleeping because you're working the night shift? The calls came pouring in. Here's some of what you had to say.
I frequently cannot fall asleep. Generally, I am awake, lying there in the dark, and I have company. And they always have beep, beep, beep before they have the news.
Welcome to World Briefing on the BBC World Service. It's midnight GMT.
Eventually, I fall asleep listening to it. I wake up in the morning, and I know all the news. It's amazing.
BBC World News with Nick Kelly. President Bush has ordered a review of rules to ensure the safety of imports following several scandals in the United States.
If bad dreams wake me up, I'll just reach across, and in the corner I've left a little toy stringed instrument that I'll play. And I just reach over in the middle of the night and I'll grab it and I'll play for as long as I feel like. Until actually slumber comes upon me again. And this actually comes out of a little bit out of my childhood. I had a brother who I would fall asleep with him playing the electric guitar, and it would rattle the bed. And when he was playing guitar, it made me feel safe. And that was, I'm sure it's part of the reason why I'm addicted to music now.
It's 3:30 in the morning. Another couple of hours and the paper boy will be tossing the Times on our doorstep. Maybe I should just stay up, brazen it out. I know, I'll start writing that article on Zen Buddhism and cognitive therapy. Really get a jump on the day. I'll pick up the Oxford Dictionary of Philosophy and go through it word by word. Start with Abelard and move to Zoroaster by the time it's light. Damn, there's another ink stain on the sheets. Nancy will not be happy. Maybe it's time to just stop trying to fall asleep. You will sleep when you cease your selfish craving for sleep. Wait a minute. Is that the paper boy? That was what I literally wrote on the yellow legal pad last night while lying awake.
I must say, when I am awake at night, I don't feel at all energetic. So what I do is read and read and read and read. Rivertown, 2 Years on the Yangtze by Peter Hessler. Switzerland, The World in Color series. The Tender Bar, set in Manhasset, New York, by Meringer. Moishe Feldenkrais's El Poder del Yo, that's what the potent self is called in Spanish. And actually, what I'd really like to read is his other book called La Dificultad de Ver lo Obvio, The Difficulty of Seeing the Obvious, which could almost have been written with me in mind. And I've just started reading The Portable Gibbon, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. The worst part about reading at night is eye strain and maybe the puzzle of finding a comfortable position to read in bed. Maybe books on tape might be a solution, but I don't think it would be the same.
Voice call received 1:42 a.m.
This is Hugh Hill. I'm an emergency physician, and right now it's about 1:43 in the morning. Our emergency room is full, and lots of people in the waiting room, and the ambulances are still rolling in. I'm walking through the department now. Out. Every room is full and on stretchers in the halls. This used to be a kind of a romantic, heroic feeling to this. Thinking of ourselves as on duty at night so most of you can sleep secure. But the overcrowding, the boarding of admitted patients waiting for a hospital bed, the frustration of people waiting too long to be seen, it all just wears us down. With all due respect to Nietzsche, that which does not kill us sometimes just makes us tired.
I've always been one of those night owl people who would stay up real late and make something or work on something. And I like that part of it, but that's very different from going for several days in a row being sleep deprived. It's suddenly not fun anymore after a while. The element of creativity is there, and you're still looking at things a different way, but there's a physical toll that it takes on you that's not fun at all. Another way to describe it, I think, is like living on two planes at once. And I used to have a good friend of mine who always talk about the definition of living on two planes at once is drinking malt liquor and watching Masterpiece Theater. And that's kind of to where you are. The night in the summer, believe it or not, it's loud. Especially some of the places I go to are kind of remote. And the tree frogs and the crickets and the birds, and it's just deafening sometimes. Especially right after a good rain, all the frogs get really fired up. Something like that. My hours are midnight to 8:30 a.m. I spend a lot of time in the truck driving, and I try to come up with songs and tunes, and sometimes I get some stuff that I think is worth keeping. I do spend quite a bit of time just looking at the windshield driving back and forth, and if a melody pops into my head or a phrase or something, I do have a little recorder that fits in the palm of my hand, and I can get down a melody or a phrase or words and then try to figure it all out later when I get home. I was just humming this song over and over, and I finally came up with an ending that I thought was okay. It's almost noon, so I think it's time for me to, or may, it is noon, isn't it? I guess it's time for me to head home and try to get some sleep.
Those were the late night voices of Tim McLean in North Carolina, Dr. Hugh Hill in Maryland, Penelope Newth in Santiago, Chile, Dr. Ronald Pies in Lexington, Mass., John Twist in Portland, Oregon, and Kathy Zuckerman in Boise. Thanks to producer Susie Lechtenberg for putting them all together. American Idol returned to TV this week. It's one of my favorite shows, not for when one lucky singer's dream comes true, but for when a bunch of other singers' dreams don't. In this early part of the season, scores of singers belt forth their effort with tremendous confidence, only to be told, no, you're not good enough. And my favorites are the ones who are stunned to receive that news. And they're like, but in my church, my family, what, huh? I don't enjoy seeing people's hearts break, but I am heartened by that slap of honesty. See, our culture has this idea that if you believe in yourself and keep chasing your dreams, you can achieve anything. It's a notion often stated by movie stars and Super Bowl champions, the people for whom that actually worked. And it sounds great, because who doesn't want to think that within their control, within a clear path, is everything that they want? But America, it's rarely true. Sometimes, often, you try hard and believe and fail because you're not good enough. Only American Idol dares speak this horrible truth. I interviewed Connecticut Senator Chris Dodd before the Iowa caucuses. He had campaigned relentlessly, and he told me,
I know I'm going to be the president.
On caucus day, Dodd finished seventh, behind uncommitted. I've never met anyone who's worked harder or seemed to believe in himself more. Contestants on American Idol are uniformly young people, and reality can help in life's journey. It's good to know who you aren't. My son comes home from school the other day and says, "Dad, at recess, I have monkey bar trouble." "Monkey bar trouble runs in the family, son," I said. "We are not men of monkey bars." I recognized my chronic mediocrity in sports early, and I surrendered the dream of playing quarterback in the NFL. I now count that realization as one of my proudest moments. I was liberated to pursue things in life I was better suited for, equipped with the knowledge that sometimes it doesn't work. The bomb dropped by failure can illuminate the path to success. I love American Idol because Simon Cowell is the bearer of wonderful, horrible, painful, beautiful gifts. A lot of people have been saying it's cold where they live this week. It takes a little prompting for me to mention it was minus 22 outside my kitchen window. But for bragging rights, we all have to give it up to Big Black River, Maine. By some reports, minus 50. Here with some fun and warmer weather is Jeannie Yandel.
You'd think the title, "Whole Lot of Breachin' Going On," refers to a presentation for Slacker Airport security officers, but it's actually Maui's Whale Watching Festival. 76 and sunny, lucky Hawaiians, for whale spotting and a sleepover near the ocean. And remember, whales may only take sealed containers of 3 ounces of liquid or less in carry-ons. In the 1600s, sailors were riddled with scurvy, and leeches were used to suck diseased blood out of people. Those were the days, says Charleston, South Carolina. See what it was like to be a mariner in the 17th century and relive terrifying moments in medical history at Day in the Life of a Sailor. Sunny and 45, so you might get some vitamin D from the sun, but take a multivitamin anyway to stave off the rickets. Minnesota's not a place to live if you don't like cold. International Falls shows freezing weather equals party weather at icebox days. Snowy and 14 for dog races and lakeside beach parties. Also, smoosh racing, which involves tying 4 people's feet to 2x4s to race other people also tied to 2x4s. I think the smoosh comes from what happens to the teammate on the bottom of the pile when everyone inevitably falls. For more information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm Jeannie Yandel for Weekend America.
He looks like Bono, talks like Bono, he's received as if he were Bono. But he isn't Bono. So wait, does that mean that he has found what he's looking for? Meet Pseudo Bono next on Weekend America. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. Sunday promises to be one of the groovier pre-inaugural concerts in recent memory. Crossing the stage in front of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington will be singers and musicians including Beyoncé, Mary J. Blige, Garth Brooks, Sheryl Crow, Herbie Hancock, John Mellencamp, Shakira, Bruce Springsteen, James Taylor, Stevie Wonder, and, yes, Bono. But not in attendance? Not Bono. Did you know Bono has a doppelganger? Not Bono can be found at the, not so much at the Lincoln Memorial, but in the Lincoln Park neighborhood of Chicago. Producer Roman Mars introduces us to the pseudo Bono.
For 25 years, people have told Pavel Sfera that he looks like Bono. And he does. He's got the strong jaw, the same nose, the slicked back hair. But when he puts on the rose-tinted wraparound shades, something magical happens.
All my childhood issues gotta go out the window with these glasses. It's almost like Wonder Twin powers activate. Put the glasses on. I am a super rock and roll hero. I'm the savior of the world. Just come love me.
As I walked into the Hidden Shamrock with Pavel in his full Bono regalia, the place practically hums with excitement, and I have to say, it feels awesome to walk into a bar with Bono. It's easy to see why someone would want to be this man.
After my father passed away about 5.5 years ago, and just, you know, a few things dawned on me, you know, too much corporate work, too much chasing the almighty dollar, and not having as much fun as I'd like to have. Wasn't as happy as I usually am. And I thought, you know, I'll make less money, but I'll have a lot of fun. I'll touch a lot of people's hearts.
On the streets of Lincoln Park, my one-foot microphone gives the scene further legitimacy, and passersby, every single passerby, takes notice. Frat boys in SUVs shout Bono's name out of their windows. Women walk past, then suddenly stop 10 feet away, sheepishly look back, processing what they just saw. And through it all, Pavel smiles, waves, thickens the Irish brogue a bit, and encourages the boldest of them to come up and say hi.
Hi, ladies, how are you?
Danny, nice to meet you.
Kaylee,
how do you do?
It's nice to meet you.
It is clear that this isn't just an impersonation gig. Pavel is on a mission to make the people that he meets, the people he fools, feel really good. If Bono is the ambassador of peace and goodwill, Pavel lives to be the ambassador of the ambassador.
And I'm gracious about him. And I love the man for all the work he does. And to see that people are so affectionate towards him, and multi-generational, multicultural, you gotta love that, man. You gotta love it. It's a great feeling to be loved.
I want to say I'm a big fan.
Thanks a lot, man. I'm a big fan of yours.
Sure.
Not at all, man. Absolutely.
I appreciate it. This is awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Awesome.
Yeah, take it easy. God bless you, brother. Peace. Sometimes they'll come up and say, can I give you a hug? I'm like, sure, you know, because I know they know, and it's like, they know that I'm, you know, I'm not Bono, but I'm a symbol of something that they feel so powerfully for, and I let it happen.
But for most people, he's more than just a symbol for Bono. He is Bono. And though he never explicitly says it, unless directly asked, he never says he isn't Bono either. And this coy charade is harmless when we're hanging out in a bar or walking around Lincoln Park. But sometimes the subterfuge can get a little weird, like when a starstruck Chicago firefighter came to pay his respects to the man who influences millions. He tried to give Pavel a t-shirt.
Oh, no, my brother, I can't, man, I really can't.
It's our pleasure, really.
Oh, man. This is a fine fireman. Now, see, I'm having a moment here. Can I take this with grace
Absolutely. And
humility? No matter who you think I am, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. No problem. I understand. I mean, not sure how I should interpret that, but yeah, of course. It's my pleasure.
All right, cool. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, man. Oh, man. See, this is the dilemma, you know? And now I'm thinking, do I tell him? Do I tell him? But, you know, here's what I've done. Give me a shirt. I'll send him a CD, a thank you note, and a business card with, you know, BonoDouble.com. Oh, goodness.
I have to admit, I felt a little uncomfortable there.
Yeah. I will go over there and tell the guys that I'm not the real thing, because I just feel a little funky.
Do you want to go over there now? Do you want to?
Yeah, let's go over there. Moment of...
usually they yell, hey, fireman, but this time, you know.
Gentlemen, how are you? I have to tell you something. If you guys are okay, man, but you have to be good with me. I'm an impersonator. I'm a total lookalike.
I still have the shirt. It's okay.
Man, it would mean the world to me. I'm telling you, man.
You had me going, brother. You had me going good.
We're not gonna feed anybody in the business.
You know those girls? They're coming too and says, hey, that's real Bono. Yeah, man, it's real Bono.
Yeah.
I'm Romanian.
So am I.
Yeah, sure.
I am. Yeah, parents in Romania.
You're kidding.
No. Let's go to Yugoslavia, parents in Romania.
Hey, take a picture with me.
Hey,
before it was the real Bono, he didn't want a picture. Now that he knows he's Romanian, it's like, oh my God, you got to take a picture.
And it'll serve as a constant reminder how gullible I really am.
No.
All right, show me how. Here.
You just push the button. Keep along on the flash. Okay. Come on over here.
I know my own identity. I know my own sense of self. But I also am going through the spiritual journey and recognizing that there's a profound sense of love I know nothing about. And I'm humbled, I'm touched, and I'm also excited to be a part of that.
In Chicago, I'm Roman Mars for Weekend America.
Photos of fake Bono among the firefighters are at our website, weekendamerica.org. And that does it for another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. In case you weren't around to hear this last week or haven't heard it today, our program is coming to an end. Am I bugging ya? I didn't mean to bug ya. January 31st is the final edition of Weekend America. We're sad. Life and radio will go on, but we're sad. Our website will go on, too. All the stories that you have ever loved from Weekend America are available for the listening and enjoying at weekendamerica.org. They will be available there indefinitely. We will live on in your hearts, your headphones, and your weekends. You can download a free podcast of the entire program there, too. I'm John Moe. I will talk to you next week. Bye now.
Weekend America is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and by the Poetry Foundation in support of poetry on American public media programs. More information online at poetryfoundation.org. This program is also made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
The weekend is the perfect time to sit back and reflect.
There is some kind of sense of isolation and desolation that makes it like a dream moving around in some of these landscapes.
Look, traveling all across this nation can get expensive. Let us do it for you. I'm John Moe, host of Weekend America. Every week we take you across the country and show you what your friends and neighbors are doing and thinking. Join us.